Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, our friend, Chapel Hill businessman, real estate appraiser, former president of the Realtors Board of Realtors here in Chapel Hill, P.H. Craig, has got many interests, but I'm not sure whether there's any so high on his list as his love of automobiles. And he brought me out to his house and a compound the other day with some of his other friends to take a look at some of his cars. And I just thought I needed to share some of this with you, with our listeners. So, PH, thanks for agreeing to do it. It's kind of hard we can't visualize cars, but you can talk about cars. And the car that I liked was Junior Johnson's car. Can you tell us about this Chrysler? Is it a 1960 Chrysler
automobile? It's a 1960 Chrysler DG that Junior Johnson, the famous race car driver, hauled liquor in. And I bought the car something 14 years ago, and I recently wrote a story, and it's published in a magazine. So the history is very current in my mind. Junior tried to buy it right in front of me, but I gave them exactly what they were asking for it. It's a legendary car that it said that it would go 168 miles an hour up the mountain, down the mountain, loaded or unloaded with bootleg liquor. So that's the legacy of my famous 1960 Chrysler.
So you've got it, and it's you could drive it today, could you?
It hasn't been started in about 14 years. DG, I've got a number of cars, and it's a terrible thing not to start the cars and drive them, but I just don't
have the
time. You
can't do all of them. Well, tell us some more about the car. And Junior Johnson, you know, when we were growing up, there wouldn't be anybody who didn't know who Junior Johnson was, but now it's Dale Earnhardt Jr., and we've got a whole new list of people who are in the middle of the NASCAR racing. Tell us a little bit about Junior Johnson and how hauling bootleg liquor in this Chrysler automobile that you now own, what that had to do with automobile racing.
Well, in about 1998, I was working in a car club in Charlotte, and there was a huge display there, a big, long, white tents. And in that tent, it showed the beginning of bootleg whiskey and the cars that they used to drive bootleg in. It started out with a 1937 Ford, 1940 Ford, and then it would graduate on up to the nicer-looking cars that didn't look like they hauled bootleg. Well, in that building, signing autographs was Junior Johnson. Well, I had owned this car for several years, and I had done research on Junior Johnson, and I consider him a legend. He's a lovable character. He is so quotable and so affable. You know, as an ex-military officer, he's a man that I would love to have had in my ranks. So I asked Junior, I said, Junior, did you haul liquor in that 1960 Chrysler that Bill Irwin had up there in his museum? He kind of hauled around a little bit, and he said, yep, I reckon I hauled in a lot of them. Well, the books show that he was hauling 7 days a week, four trips a night, and then he would race. Now, when I got the car and I was told that it was a Junior, I said, surely Junior Johnson wasn't hauling liquor in 1962. But there was no money to be made in racing. So these drivers that were really good on the road, and he was never caught. He would scare the dickens out of the revenue men, and he was faster than any of them. His book talks all about going in detail. They carefully maintained the cars. They would take a car, completely rebuild it. Well, here comes this Chrysler 300F which was called a gentleman's hot rod, and it had everything that bootleggers. It was low swung, it had heavy suspension, it didn't look like a bootleg car. So this was a dream come true, and my research shows that he hauled in this car for about 2 years, and about that same time he won a race in Hillsboro, and in his book there is a photograph of him at the Hillsboro Speedway with Jane Mansfield's son, and her husband. He won the race. So here he was leading this double life and being a very successful race car driver, but he was making his money hauling liquor.
Well, now, he was a bootlegger, and sometimes we get confused
My he was not a bootlegger. He was a hauler.
He was a
professional driver. His father was a bootlegger, and his father had, somebody said, 1,000 steals over the period of the time. And he would sometimes go to 10 to steal, but I don't know that he just specialized in moving it around. And you know he was good, and that's how he learned to drive, was evading the cops.
Well, PH, I've got to get it straight. Maybe you can help me, but we got moonshiners, and I thought moonshiners were the ones who ran the stills and made the liquor, and that bootleggers were the transporters and marketers of liquor that was illegal, whether moonshine or whether it was liquor that just wasn't taxed and that you were moving it into a dry county or something like that. What is your understanding of those terms?
I don't know of the distinction. I know my mom was in, she somehow worked for the feds, and she had convinced me, she did work against the Klan and against bootleggers, and she was a witness for pouring out bootleg whiskey.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Yeah, so that was my knowledge of them, and I thought they were all bad guys. And here I meet this Junior Johnson, who is an absolute teddy bear. And then I read the books about Thunder Road and the Irish and Scotch that settled the western counties of North Carolina, and how impoverished they were, and how their only income really was to take corn and distill it, and it was very, very profitable. But again, I don't know the difference between a bootlegger and a hauler, except I know this guy was a professional hauler 7 days. It's in his book. I mean, I've talked to the editor.
Let me ask you this, PH. Was he taking moonshine liquor, untaxed liquor, from the mountains down to the cities where it would be sold?
Into many states.
Uh-huh.
Into many states, and particularly Virginia. My mother was from Virginia, and the rumor was, though she was with the feds, she was kind of soft on one of her bootleggers up there that was related to her. She would have no part of going after him, but she helped go after the others.
Well, it's a great story. I'm visiting with my friend, a Chapel Hill businessman, P.H. Craig, in the real estate business, but his hobby is automobiles, and we'll talk some more about them after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. P.H. Craig is my guest. P.H. and I have been talking about automobiles. Really, P.H., we've been talking about one automobile, one that you own that was previously owned by Junior Johnson. And you've told us a little bit about Junior. I want to know about you. And, you know, why'd you buy this car? Did you have to pay a lot of money for it? Is it a good investment, or is it just something you like to have in heaven, you know, that you could go out and look at and show your friends?
DG, when I started buying these vehicles, they were old Chryslers. Well, nobody in North Carolina drove Chryslers except my mom and dad. And they drove Chryslers and DeSotas and bought me a DeSoto after my first Model A. So that was my attachment and my knowledge. But they were not good investments then. This is a good investment now because of the Junior Johnson story. But Chryslers are not high on the demand list in North Carolina. Your Fords and your Chevrolets, which is what people drove, are high-ticket items. Generally, Chryslers are, there's just not that much demand for them. I can walk on the street and sell a 55 Chevrolet, 57 Chevrolet. I would walk miles before I found anybody that would buy my Chrysler.
Well, give us, like, talking about the cars that you aren't selling, but you say that these old, that is old in the 50s and early 60s, automobiles, which are now collector's items, what you're seeing is if you want to make money, don't deal in Chryslers, deal in Chevrolets. Is that what you're saying?
Well, back then, of course, I started collecting old Hemis. Hemis are very fast.
I don't know what a Hemi
and they
is.
Were the, they were the cars that my dad absolutely, you know, he said, son, you cannot have a horse. It will eat you out of house and home. And he would not buy me a Hemi because he thought it would, you know, I'd kill myself in it. And so here I am. I've got 8 or 9 Hemi engines. They are very powerful engines. They blew everything off the racetracks in 1955 and 1956 with names like Buck Baker and Flonnie Flock. And actually, Richard Petty's father, Lee Petty, started out racing a 1951 Chrysler Saratoga. And, of course, then his son came along and started driving Plymouths and Dodges. But that's the legacy of the race. But I'm also attached to military vehicles. My dad taught me to drive on a four-wheel drive Dodge pickup truck after World War II, and he used that to build a house and to make a living. He actually used that pickup truck to haul logs to a site. I went out in the woods with him, and he selected the logs, and he built a huge trailer that he towed that in. So I have an attachment to military vehicles because of my dad and because of those fond memories. So I have 6 or 8 military vehicles, one of which that I have discussed briefly with you is I call it the Bill Friday Jeep. And if you want to go in that, I'll be glad to tell you a little bit more about how.
Go there, and then I'm going to come back for, you know, for the prices of these, how much we pay for these old cars that won't run. But, yeah, you've gotten us into the military stuff. And tell us about Mr. President, former, you know, the late Bill Friday, the former president of the University of North Carolina.
Well, first of all, I loved Bill Friday. I feel like I worked for him, with him. I was a gopher at South Building. The minute the classes were over, I would get on the payroll and run errands. I'd run up and down. Back then, there was no emails. You run stuff between offices. I worked in housing. I worked in administration. So I got to know Bill Friday, also in a church for 35 years together. He was also a fraternity brother. So I knew and absolutely adored him. And one day I open up the Alumni Review, and there's a picture of Bill Friday sitting in a World War II Jeep. And I couldn't believe it. I called Bill Friday, my good buddy, and I said, Bill, you won't believe this. I am working on restoring a Jeep identical to the one you were sitting in. Oh, he said, I want to see it. I want to see it. I said, okay. So I made an appointment. And he came and sat out in the hot sun for about, according to some reports, for 30 minutes or an hour before I met him. He loved the Jeep. And so I said, Bill, I'm going to restore this Jeep in your honor. This is going to become the Bill Friday Jeep. And my regrets are he only saw it in the primer. And I just gave you a picture of he and I and Roland Gittes and a deputy named J.T. Horton. But Bill Friday is just intently looking at this World War II Jeep with all its brackets and the loops and the top bows and the brackets for a jerry can. Jerry can was a gas can. And it was fortunately a Jeep that had not been slicked down and modified. And so Bill Friday was, oh, and he loved his Jeep in World War II. Said they were very fast. And really had some fond memories and spent hours out there with one of his associates and a couple of my buddies. And so that's one of my – I have one that I am dedicating to Dr. George Johnson, a famous surgeon doctor at UNC. I have one identical to the one my dad owned and taught me to drive on that's on the back burner. I have one that I call the Patton Dodge Command Car, and another one that with Navy markings on it. So I have a very fond memory of these military vehicles. I'm a retired Navy commander also, but I was Navy and not Army, and these, of course, are Army vehicles.
Well, us Army veterans are happy to welcome you to the fold, and thank you for preserving our heritage. But PH, you described, I think, four different military vehicles, or three or four different military vehicles that you have either restored or under restoration or set aside for renovation, restoration at some time in the future when you have time and money to do it. How do you, what's your program about restoration? How do you have it done?
DG, that's a good question. I do priorities. Some of my stuff I don't see for 5 years. It stays in the old barn with a cover on it. And the beauty of this, it's not an interest. It's a passion. I mean, I love old vehicles. The beauty of it is that you can walk away from it for 5 years, and that old vehicle is going to be right there under that cover when you go back. So I don't go hell-bent for leather. When something falls into my hand, parts here, and I have parts assembled that I bought on eBay when eBay opened up back in the, I guess, the 80s and 90s, that I bought pennies on the dollar so that when I start restoring, I've got what I need sitting there on in the barn. Of course, sometimes I buy stuff that I will never need, but gosh, when I do need it, it's tremendously valuable. So that's my system, is a priority. Right now, I'm rebuilding the engine in the Bill Friday Jeep.
Well, all right, now what do you, when you say I'm rebuilding the engine...
I'm lying.
What
I mean is I'm paying to have it rebuilt. Actually, I'm switching engines from another Jeep that Dr. George Johnson gave me is going into that.
Well, when you this is a question I think that comes up a lot with respect to restored items, particularly automobiles and machines. And you're taking the original engine out and putting a new engine in. At what point do you put so much different stuff in it that it's not the same? It's not the same item.
I like everything authentic. I like everything original. I change nothing. My dream is to have a restored vehicle exactly like the one that rolled off the assembly line. When I was 13 years old, my dad bought me a Model A coupe. Bought it from one of his ex-girlfriends for $5, and we rebuilt that thing. And it was an incredible experience. So that was my early on experience with old cars.
And on that one, you really did do the work, not
Yes, we did. He and I literally tore the engine apart and put it back together. And I had an old rifle that I traded for some engine parts for that.
Well, now, PH, I think I told you I read this book, Autobiography, which was the history of 157 Chevrolet.
I loved it.
And what you learned was that you say in 1957, car cost $2,500 or $3,000.
Or less.
Something like that, new, brand new. Then as it got older, the price
goes up.
What expected? Well, at first it goes down. As it 5 or 6 years later, it goes down.
Yeah.
Then maybe it stops running and winds up in a junkyard, and it approaches the price of the, like this $5 Ford that you got. It's just salvage. And then all of a sudden, people start wanting it, and it gets in the hands of somebody like you who can either restore it or supervise and finance the restoration of it. And even though it's not restored at that point, when it becomes an object of possible restoration, the price jumps up, even higher than the price that it might have sold new. What is your experience in that?
No question about that. But you don't get in this hobby or this interest or this passion for the profit. Generally, there is no profit, generally. I think that my stuff I bought at such a low level and so many years ago that it is worth many, many times what I put into it, and it has been a good investment for me. And that's one of my guides. I look in a guidebook, and I don't fool with cars. I don't restore cars that don't have a high top-end restoration value. For example, you can spend $20,000 restoring a 1957 Chrysler four-door sedan. You can spend the same amount on a 56 Chrysler convertible or a 57 Chrysler convertible. That would be worth four times what you will get for the four-door sedan. So I use that as my guide. So even though it's my passion, and I have only one sedan, I have two sedans in my collection because sedans are not as valuable as two-door hardtops. I don't invest in, I found one that was by a college professor that was stored in a barn on Cameron Avenue, and I can't think of this gentleman's name now. It was a 1957 Chrysler, three-tone, and it had twin antennas and wide white walls. And this was a real character out of the history of UNC. And I have a story on all of mine, a 1958 Dodge. Beautiful, beautiful car that reminds me of Lawrence Welk. I used to watch him roll in California when I was working at Pacific Ocean Park, and I was staying at UCLA. I lived at UCLA this summer. I stayed in a fraternity house there. So that's a Lawrence Welk Dodge. It's a 58 Dodge. And my 47 DeSoto, I think of...
I tell you what, let's take a break, and then I want to hear more about this DeSoto, because I think that... Next to the Junior Johnson car, I think maybe that's got your heart. I'm visiting with P.H. Craig, and we're talking about cars in his collection. I'm sorry he doesn't think that he's not really excited about it, but maybe we can get him more excited after we take this break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you join us late, I'm visiting with P.H. Craig, my friend and fellow Chapel Hillian, except he's been here a lot longer than I have. P.H., a lot of people think of you as being originally Chapel Hillian, but you grew up a long way from here. You grew up in Hillsboro.
I haven't come very far in life from Hillsboro to Chapel Hill, but I did spend a lot of time traveling the world as a Navy officer, so... Man, I know this is the place I love, and I love the people in this town, and this town has been extremely good to me.
Well, you've been good to the town as well. And before the break, you were getting ready to talk about another car that you like. Earlier, you talked about this Chrysler 1960s version that Junior Johnson hauled liquor in, and that's close to your heart. Is the one you're going to tell us about higher up or just right about the same level?
Right now, it has my heart. It is sitting in my garage. I'm sorry, sitting in my carport. I look at it every day. It's a beautiful cream-colored DeSoto, 1947, just like the one my dad picked up and took me to Elkins in Durham to pick up many, many years ago. except he bought a black one. This, I think of Groucho Marx, and I think my dad drove DeSoto's because Groucho Marx advertised DeSoto's, and he loved Groucho Marx. Nothing would stop him from watching a Groucho Marx program. And Groucho advertised DeSoto's from the 40s through the 50s, even when he had the Ford look. And this car is not terribly valuable. It's a four-door sedan, but it has beautiful chocolate brown mohair, carpet, headliner, and seats. And I drove it around the parades for a few years and retired it in my, and I pulled it back out and spent some money on it. And that's the typically the way I'll take a car out and drive it for a while and put it back. But right now, that has captured my heart. Not a very valuable car. I mean, a 1947 DeSoto, who wants them? I found out another reason that my dad probably drove DeSoto's. It had four forward speeds. It was also a New York City taxi. And that extra gear in there was a scat gear. It was a passing gear. And he liked to pass people. He was a fast driver.
Well, PH, you keep talking about this DeSoto. You love it a lot. So, but you keep saying, well, it's not all that valuable. It's not all that valuable. Well, what would be the estimated, if you had to buy one like this now, what would you have to pay for it?
Several thousand dollars. It's not in number one condition. Less than $10,000, and it's easy, as I said, it's easy to spend 10 or 15 on restoring a car like that.
So you would spend, what if you just bought it unrestored? You're talking about that is the price before you start?
I bought it unrestored. Well, it was most cars I buy are, quote, restored. And then I find out you got to put new brakes, and sometimes you have to rebuild the top of the engine, and you have to go through a lot of things. And this car was ostensibly restored, but I have spent just in the last year about $3,000 on it.
So that's an interesting concept. And maybe you would say it like this, that no car is ever fully restored, that restoration is an ongoing project.
It's a journey. It's a journey. And if you must reach the destination now, don't get in the rest. You've got to have the patience of Job and just wait. And it don't come easy. Nobody likes to work on these cars anymore. Nobody will work on them. Nobody knows anything about them.
Well, that's real interesting. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that because when you and I were growing up, either we or some of our buddies, could take a car and pretty much take it apart, put it back together again.
Yep.
The things that ran it might be complicated, but you could understand it and you could learn how to fix it. You could go and find parts for it. Now, for the last 20 years or so, these cars are full of computers, and you find that you can't really repair parts. You just have to buy new ones.
You can't rebuild a starter. You have to buy the whole starter. And I can remember as a small child going with my dad to a junkyard. That's what you did in the old days, and there were junkyards all around. You needed a starter. You either put new brushes in it, or you bought one from the junkyard, and it was you unbolt, bolt on, and you're ready to go. But now the new generation, for like you say, for 20 years, nobody's done this. And the problem is the mechanics cannot diagnose the problems. I'm probably better at diagnosing the problems. And generally I tell the mechanic, this is what it needs. And we've got to put a new starter. We've got to rebuild this starter. Or, you know, the points need filing or new points.
PH, you have on your property almost a full museum of automobiles. Are there others out here in Chapel Hill and around surrounding area who are collecting?
I don't know of many. There are not many in the Chapel Hill area. There is a car club that used to exist. I'm not sure. In fact, I was president of it 10, 12, 15 years ago. And there is a car club in Raleigh that's very active. And there is a real big club called the Cruisers in Eflin. And a lot of them are hot rods. And there are some restored cars. But regretfully, for example, the Chrysler that I have, there probably isn't, there may not be another one in the state, or maybe two. And east of the Mississippi, they may be four. These cars were not popular. They were popular in New York. They were popular in California. They made them in California, and they must have made some in New York.
Well, what other pleasures do you get out of it? Every now and then you'll see in one of the in the Christmas parade or in some parade, you'll see an old convertible or an old car, and a celebrity is in there.
DG, thanks for asking that. I get immense pleasure in sharing these cars. And the greatest pleasure that I ever received, I was driving my 56 Chrysler Aqua in white, and somewhere along the route between Chapel Hill and Carrboro, there was a nine-year-old girl that was almost just pressing her nose. I mean, she was very close to the parade. And as I approached, she said, "Pretty car." And I said, "God, all this work is worth it." I have a red Chrysler 300 convertible that was the parade car, the official parade car, I guess, for 10 years in Chapel Hill. I hauled all the dignitaries, including my best friend at the time, Howard Lee and Lillian and Rebecca Clark. So I enjoy sharing these, and occasionally I'll open them up to my friends, as I did to you and a few other people.
Now you've mentioned that many of them are awaiting restoration or work.
Oh, yes.
And some that have been restored, like the I was surprised when you told me that your beloved Chrysler, the Junior Johnson Chrysler, hadn't been started. So it's, you know, you can't share that really with
your
friends.
I would not hesitate to bet big money that I could get it started in within 24 hours. That's what a lot of people don't understand about old cars. You can't just go out there and turn a key. One, you've got to go get a battery. Two, you better check your brakes. Three, on a lot of these old cars, the brakes drums will freeze, and you've got to work them free. You've got to check all the systems, and safety is paramount before you put those cars on the road. You can't just have the engine running, and it takes time. And you never know. Chances are something is you're going to need a wire here. You're going to need a tune-up there. Are you going to need something? You got to need to pump up your tires, for example. Little things that can, you know, be an hour of work or 3 hours of work.
So it would be true with almost any machine that if you don't use it for a long time, it's going to take.
Absolutely. My parade car, the red Chrysler that I paraded, I went out the other day when you were out there and the brakes are frozen. Well, now that's no reason to get upset. I was able to get a new brake master cylinder, and I have made arrangements with Ronnie Reagan, who works on some old cars, and Tim's Carcraft out in Carrboro works on my cars. In fact, he has one out there right now. He keeps one out there. You know, I would not drive that car until those brakes are perfect.
Well, visiting with P.H. Craig, we're talking about one of his first loves. That's his automobiles. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you joined us late, my guest is P.H. Craig. We're talking about cars. And those people who know P.H. know, he said during the break that I could call it his passion. And it is. It's something that that you care a lot about. Now, P.H., you're probably not, but I'm getting along in years. And the kinds of things I wonder about is, who's going to take care of my stuff when I'm gone? Who's going to take care of your stuff when you're gone? Your cars, what's going to happen to them?
DG, I just made arrangements with my good friend and law classmate, Bill Wichert's law firm. I have set up a trust, and have a trustee and instructions on what is to happen. I am hopeful that a lot of these cars will go to a museum or museums. I would love to see the Junior Johnson liquor hauler be in his museum, except he doesn't have one. But it certainly should be. The 47 DeSoto is an absolute work of art. It's beautiful, graceful lines. At the time it came out, it was considered very sensuous and very sexy. And it has a very suggestive hood emblem, as many of the cars did of that era. But this one really, really has a it's something you would see in a Roman garden. It's the bust of a woman, and it's more bust than it is woman, if you know what I where I'm going with that. But it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of art. And that's my objective, is to keep them, and so next generation can enjoy them. They're getting fewer and fewer. They're being crushed. I fear that, you know, when times get bad, people steal these things and crush them for a few hundred dollars. That's actually happening. And I'm hoping that I will have a lot of survivors, and I'm hoping, and I put explicit instructions in my trust that I don't care about getting the top dollar. I want them to go to somebody that will appreciate it, that will take them the next step. And a lot of what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, this is my step. Then I'm hoping the next guy will take it the next way. And if I've got a number three, one being a high, maybe he'll take it to a number two or a number one.
Well, let me ask you this. That's interesting. And so you're putting it in the hands of somebody who will take charge of this and do the best job they can, that
yes.
person can, after you are gone. I wonder right now, have you ever given up any one of these cars?
I don't sell. It's funny, I have given away two cars this week in the last 10 days.
And well, tell us about what prompted
well,
you to do
that. Well, I gave one to our good friend, Trish Hosey, to use at Freedom House. I think she does a wonderful job.
Yeah, good. Well, that's great. Now, what need would she have of an old car?
Well, it's not an old. Well, it had 200,000 miles on it, but
it's not a
it
classic.
Was excellent. It was a Mercedes, and it's in excellent condition, and it has many, many thousand miles.
So
left
this is you gave.
I have pampered the car, loved it, and it looks like new sitting out there right now. It looks like new, drives like new, and sounds like new. I gave another one to Agape Corner. I'd bought Dr. Roy Lindahl's Mercedes. Both of them were 98 models. And I thought, well, between the two of them, I could keep them running, and there's only one driver. So, you know, I can drop one off, and then I'll have one to drive. And I traded for a new car, so I've given two. I gave one to Hurricane Floyd. It was a Chevrolet Kingswood station wagon, but it was an extraordinarily valuable car because it had a 409 engine in it. And that's what the Beach Boys used to sing about, 409.
So you gave it to a charitable organization, which
I gave
would sell
it through
it to
the Presbyterian Church. And I have the cover spread story, and it was used for delivery of food to all of the, and I hauled down there regularly and hauled other cars. I donated two or three cars then, and that I sort of culled them out, but I never sell. I'm
so
not
I,
in it for
so I can look at you and say you'll never sell a car, but you'll give some away.
I can just say I have not sold a single car. I have given away, I have given three or four to Central Carolina Community College because my good friend Billy Eubanks teaches there. I've given away a couple of Cadillacs and my High Sierra GMC to Tarosa in Durham when I use them for a certain time. And I have a work truck. I got 179,000 miles on it. But I take care of my cars. And if you take care of your cars, you can run them for a long time. A lot of people don't know that.
Well, PH, we've asked you what you're going to do with it when you're gone. And now we've asked you what you do with it now. And the only thing I've heard is I never sell them. If I want to get rid of it, I give them away.
I'm always looking. If you know of a Mustang, I have a collection of Mustangs. Call me.
Well, that's really interesting. One of the things that people who have old cars use them for sometimes is that sometimes the movies people come and borrow them. Would that be something you'd be willing to do?
I am not particularly interested in that, DG. You can get some remuneration. I've known some cars that were seriously damaged, and once they start mounting their cameras, and it's easy for them to abuse it. And there's not that much demand around here. But I mentioned Mustang. I just got to tell you, I've got one of the first early Mustangs that was bought new here in Chapel Hill, a 64-and-a-half red convertible by a lady that lived in Glen Lennox. She bought it from a Ford place in Pittsburgh.
Well, PH, guess what? You're going to have to come back and tell me about that Mustang.
I'd love to.
Of people are going to want to hear about it. I thank you for sharing your passion.
My pleasure.
For old automobiles. And so we thank P.H. Craig for his visit, and thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.